Okay, here we are again talking about another classic movie from the 1980s.
Yep.
Now this one, someone recommended, because Rutger Hauer recently passed away.
Yeah.
He was like, why don't you do a Rutger Hauer movie? And since we've already done Blade Runner, the first one I thought of was The Hitcher.
Yeah. I'm glad you recommended this one, Jenny, because I've never seen it.
Yeah, this freaked me out because I told him about it. I'm like, oh, we have to do The Hitcher. It's like so good, and I haven't seen it in such a long time. And he had like never even heard of it.
Yeah, this was like spot on. I mean, this is one that I wish I would have known about because it was like everything I like in a movie. I mean, for guys that haven't seen it, it's very much kind of like a mixture of Mad Max 1. It's kind of like Mad Max 1, maybe like Hills Have Eyes, and imagine Roy Batty. You know, from Blade Runner, being the bad guy. And it's a cool flick, man. I liked it.
Rutger Hauer is so scary.
Yeah, there wasn't... it also kind of like... Remember, what was the one? Like Duel. Yeah. A little bit like Duel also.
A lot of people have compared it to Duel. It's a very, very similar story.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of dialogue in a lot of it.
It's a very... Like you said, it's a very simple, like, elemental story. It came out in early 1986... And it was written by a guy named Eric Red. Now, he had only, as far as I know, he had only written, like, short films before this. But he actually got the idea for the movie from the Doors song, Riders on the Storm. Like, he was listening to it when he was on a road trip. And he was like, man, wouldn't that make, like, a great opening of a movie? Just, like, somebody on this desolate road. And then he spent, like, he was living in Texas at the time. And he was, like, driving a cab. And so he wrote the screenplay. Now, the original version of the screenplay was more than 3 hours long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very simple story. Young guy, he's probably in his early 20s, out in the desert out in Texas, being chased by a fucking serial killer. And the cops getting involved, and he's taking the rap for what this serial killer's doing. The cops think that he did it. It's wild. It's pretty wild. It also, in a weird way, kind of reminds me of a Van Damme movie, in a way. I don't know why. There was just something about it where that kid could have been played by Van Damme.
It's funny because I was looking at all the actors that they considered for both roles. Some of the actors they considered for the C. Thomas Howell role, who plays a character named Jim Halsey, were Tom Cruise. I don't know. I don't think that would have worked. As Tom Cruise is too cocky, even when he was young. I don't think that would have come off. Also, Emilio Estevez, Matthew Modine.
Yeah.
Those kind of people. Matthew Modine probably would have been good. Because I think the reason that C. Thomas Howell worked so well was because he's kind of a scrawny kid. He was clearly very young. And you could tell that he was like a good-hearted dude, but he didn't have like a lot of common sense.
Yeah. Well, he was naive.
Yeah, and he was like real young and naive, so I think that really worked to the movie's advantage. Now, it should be noted that C. Thomas Howell, when he took this role, like when he first heard about it, because like they sent him the script and he was like, man, I don't know if I want to do that, it just sounds like a generic thriller, but then they sent him the script and he thought it was amazing, and it's like, I couldn't put it down, and then when he found out that Rutger Hauer was going to be the villain, he's like, oh, I really want to do it now because I'm fucking terrified of that guy. Yeah. The actor. I'm terrified of the actor.
This is the best Rutger Hauer movie I've seen where he starred in it. I've seen some of the other ones where he was starring in it, and they tend to be B-movies. Like, there was an Alien ripoff that I saw. I don't remember what that one was.
Someone recommended Nighthawks to me of him being a villain, and I don't think I've seen that. But to be honest, even when he's a good guy, like, for example, in Lady Hawk, he's still, like, super menacing. Like, he seems like he can't help himself.
He seems psycho.
He's just like this very like icy, fucking.
I know why it reminded me of a Van Damme movie. You know what? It in certain parts, in certain scenes, it looks like the scene where from Universal Soldier, where Van Damme was out in the desert in that.
I gotcha.
In the hotel, because there's a lot of settings kind of like that. I think that's where kind of got that flavor, but really it reminds me of a Mad Max movie.
Yeah,
and like Road Warrior and Mad Max 1 kind of combined, but it's not. It seems post-apocalyptic in the beginning because, you know, there's dust storms and stuff going on, and you're not really sure, you know, where this is taking place. You find out later it's Texas.
Yeah,
I thought it was Mojave Desert maybe.
Yeah, you can't really say. Like, he does say that he's, I mean, the whole setup of the movie, it's like all he's doing is that he's from Chicago and he is driving a car to San Diego in what they called a drive away, which is like somebody that ordered a car and they need like people to drive them to the person that bought them, I'm guessing.
I don't know.
I think that's what that, I don't know if they, I don't think they do that anymore.
I have no idea.
But, back in the day, they did that, and he said, like, later on, he said he'd been on a list because he really wanted to drive out to California, and he wanted to, like, get paid for doing it. So it's not his car. He's, like, driving out. I think it's a Cadillac.
I don't remember.
I think, I mean, that's what everything I said about it, but I couldn't remember. I thought it was a fucking Chevy Cutlass when I was watching it.
Yeah, the car he was driving, I thought that was a Malibu Classic.
Yeah.
A Chevy Malibu Classic.
I don't know. It's like most of the reviews I said it was a Cadillac.
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think it was.
No.
I thought, like I said, I thought it was a Chevy Cutlass, but because my dad used to have one that looked almost exactly like that.
I think the Cutlass and the Malibu Classic were about the same car.
They did. They looked very similar.
I think it was like different trim packages.
That's probably why, because I'm like, oh my God,
that wasn't an expensive car. That was just a regular. I think it was like a, some, might have been a gay car. It wasn't, what, didn't, no, I think, Didn't Chevy make a K car?
I have
K
no idea.
K car platform.
I don't
Might
know
have
why
been Ford.
Asking.
I'm not sure. So
he's basically driving from Chicago to San Diego, and you know he's getting lonely. Like they show at the beginning, like he's by himself. He's listening to the radio. He's drinking coffee, trying to stay awake because I guess he's trying to get a lot of hours in. And he's falling asleep. He almost gets hit by a truck. So then, like it starts pouring down rain, and he sees this shadowy hitchhiker on the side of the road. And he doesn't say this now, but you find out later. He's like, well, you know, it was raining and I felt bad for the guy. And also I thought that if I picked someone up to have somebody to talk to, then they would keep me awake and I could like drive longer. So it's not like he's just an idiot and he's, you know, he just felt bad for the guy because he couldn't really see him because it was like dark and everything. And the funny thing is that as soon as like Rucker Hauer like pokes his little head in the window, Jim Halsey says, my mother told me to never do this. And I was like, see, this is why you should listen to your mom.
Before we get into it, too far into it, if you haven't seen this movie, you can watch it for free on YouTube.
Yeah.
They had two versions of it up. And the one version that we saw looked like 1080p. It looked pretty good.
Here's the fucked up thing. It's like, it seems like, one, they don't have a Blu-ray release in the U.S. The only country that has a Blu-ray release is Germany.
Yeah, and it's expensive.
Yeah.
And, the DVD is rare.
I think they only released it in Britain. They have like a two-disc special edition because I saw a couple of other guys reviewing it and they had the British, like with the British rating thing on the bottom.
Yeah.
And it comes with two discs, like it's got a bunch of extra shit on it.
Right.
But I think that's UK only. So, I mean, you can order it, but only if you have like a region-free player, which, you know.
I want to look more into it. I want to own this movie. I sure would like a Blu-ray release. But I'd really like to have, you'd think that now that Rucker Hauer is dead, that somebody would come out
I
with a new
steelbook
release.
I feel like maybe this
release.
Will happen because this is one of those movies. It's
like, a good movie.
It's so good and it's like, it's so, it seems like it's really underrated.
Yeah, very underrated. This is much better than a lot of other movies of its type for that time. Like, I don't know why I didn't know this movie.
I don't know either. That like
freaked me out. It evidently didn't get a good release in the U.S.
It did, it got, but it didn't do very well. Like, it got kind of, like, meh to scathing reviews. It didn't do that great at the box office. It only made, like, pretty much exactly its budget back, and that's it. Which, you know, that's a money
that's
loss.
Weird.
I don't really get why people didn't, this is one of those ones where it kind of came out, it came and went, it seemed like people didn't really want to see it, critics didn't really like it, and then, but then, like, it sort of got new life, like, on VHS and cable, because I first saw it, like, a year or two after it came out, because it came out in early 1986. I probably saw it in 87 or 88 when it came to HBO or whatever. And I think after that happened, I think it started to develop a cult following. And it's like now, if you watch, like, all these, like, horror movie reviewers and stuff like that, they're like, what the fuck, man? This is, like, the most awesome. This is, like, one of the best horror movies of the 80s, even though some people might not call it a horror movie because it's, quote-unquote, it's usually classified as, like, a thriller or, like, an action movie, but it is totally a horror movie.
Yeah.
I would definitely call it a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, even though I should say that the initial screenplay was, like, way, way, way gorier than it ended up. You know what I mean? And the only reason, like, the guy that wrote the screenplay, Eric Red, he had all this shit in there that was, like, there was all kind of like fucking, like you got to see like a person getting torn in half. There was like a eyeball in somebody's hamburger. There was like all this other kind of like super, super gory violence. And the studio wanted to make it more as a thriller and not, they're like, well, the way it reads now, it's like a slasher. Like we like it, but let's tone the violence down. And in a way, I think that worked to its advantage.
Yeah.
It is a very violent movie.
Yeah.
But a lot of the violence happens off screen, and I think that that makes it better. It makes it, like, more suspenseful. This is almost, for real, like, a fucking Hitchcock movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Kind of. It's more fast-paced than a Hitchcock
movie. It is, but in the sense of, like, particularly in the sense of, like, John Ryder, the hitchhiker, kind of framing Jim Halsey for all of his murders. That's very Hitchcockian.
If you like 80s horror or 80s action, you'd like the movie.
Yeah.
I liked it. It also had, you know, for any gun buffs out there, that had cool 80s guns. The cops were carrying Smith & Wesson snub-nose revolvers. Looked like one of them looked like a snub-nose 41 Magnum. And then, of course, at the end, the ubiquitous Frankie Spaz 12 makes an appearance. Rucker Howard with a Spaz 12. And which is a badass iconic shotgun. It's the same one that Terminator had from Terminator 1. And neat shotgun, you know. This kind of had a menacing look. And you see Rucker Howard using one. Pretty neat. They always had the damn armrest on that thing turned weird, you know. Which, guys who know what a Spaz 12 is know what I'm talking about. They had a little hook. It was kind of like a carrying handle on a damn folding stock. And you could twist it around and make it an arm brace. You could fire it one-handed. That's how Arnold was doing that in Terminator 1.
Yeah.
The little hook. But, yeah, it makes an appearance.
I was going to say, when you were talking about this being similar to Mad Max, I was like, did you know that the guy who shot this, the cinematographer, John Seal, would later go on to be nominated for an Oscar for, guess what? Mad Max Fury Road. That was the same cinematographer.
Yeah, there's desert car chases and desert car wrecks in it. Not quite as much as, you know,
as like a George Miller film, but...
But it's pretty good homage to
it. I mean, like, particularly the one scene near the end where, like, Rucker Hauer, like, shoots out the fucking helicopter and it, like, crashes and, like, blows in these fucking police cars going flying and shit like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a very Mad Max type of thing, and it looks like they did that shit for real, and they probably did.
Yeah.
Because this was 86.
Rucker Hauer shoots down a helicopter with a fucking 357 Magnum revolver that he got off a cop. And it made it, they filmed it in a way that make it look like maybe it could happen. The range was probably about 75 yards, 75 meters. And he shot the damn engine of the helicopter and it crashed. And of course, when it crashes on a road and a car hits it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think, and I'm going to kind of go into this a little bit. Like I said, if you haven't seen this movie, go watch it. A couple people have posted it for free on YouTube because I didn't realize, but it's like kind of hard to get because I was thinking, oh, they'd have a Blu-ray and shit like that. Yeah, they do not, unless you're in Germany. Yeah. So I was kind of upset, but then I was like, well, can we even rent it? Can we even, it's like the only one you can rent is like the fucking 2000 remake, which I haven't seen. It's the same writer, like Eric Red wrote the screenplay for the remake too. And I love Sean Bean, the guy that's in it, but I've heard it was terrible. I've heard that they made it, like, into a straight-up slasher movie, which is what kind of Eric Red wanted to start with, but I think it's better that they didn't go in that direction. Because, like I said, they made it a super violent, and it's kind of gory, but they don't show a lot of the stuff. Like I said, spoiler alert, when Jennifer Jason Leigh gets torn in half at the end. But they don't show it, but the noise is bad enough. Yeah. Like, the sound effect is bad enough. Because it leaves it to your imagination. You're like, oh, shit. Because you could imagine that happening.
Now, the remake, I've never seen it, so I'm not going to say
I haven't seen it either. I've heard it's bad, but...
We just heard that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know, I'm willing to give it a chance, maybe. But, you know what I mean? If they, you know, it depends on... You know, because some people don't like a lot of movies that I like. But I'm pissed that I can't get this on Blu-ray. I want a fucking cool...
It's just, like, it amazed me because, okay... Now, people that grew up in the 80s, and especially if you had HBO, Cinemax, shit like that, like I did when I was a teenager, it's like, this seemed like it was in pretty heavy rotation because I saw it like a bunch of times, like in the mid to late 80s. And so I feel like, and I feel like it has like a pretty big cult following. So I thought it would be super easy. Like when we went to go buy a copy of it, I thought it would be easy to get, and it's really not. And I think that's very, very weird. It seems like it slipped through the cracks.
That company that did that released that Blu-ray of Dagon that you bought for me, you would think that'd be an excellent company to probably release something.
Yeah, so why doesn't like Shout Factory or Arrow or somebody like that? Well, Arrow, I guess they do. That's UK, I think.
But, I got a feeling now that Rutger's gone, you'll probably start seeing that.
I feel like that too, because they'll probably like re-release a lot of his back catalog. But you know what I mean? Okay, so what I wanted to get into a little bit, because we were talking about this when we watched the movie. Now, there are some, like I said, this whole movie, there's dialogue in it, but not a lot. It's basically just like a really long, like, cat and mouse game between this crazy psychopathic hitchhiker and this poor kid who did a good deed and then, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, as they say.
Now, this character is basically Roy Batty. I mean, it's Rutger doing Roy Batty, basically. So if you like that character, you'll like this one.
I mean, as soon as he gets in the car, like, this movie, like, seriously does not fuck around. It's like there's a couple minutes of like C. Thomas Howell like driving and drinking coffee, and then he almost like he falls asleep and he almost hits a truck. And then a couple minutes later he picks fucking Rutger Hauer up, and one of the first things Rutger Hauer says, there's like there's some little small talk, and like Jim Halsey is like asking him some questions and he's very evasive and like he won't really answer them. And then he says something like they pass this other car, like this little VW Beetle, and the hitchhiker just like puts his fucking foot on the gas and it's like speeds past, and the dude's like, what the fuck, man? And he's like, you know, and it's like the people that run the car, he's like, yeah, I cut off his legs and his arms and his head, and I'm gonna do the same to you. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh shit, now it's on. And the thing is, it's like you think, you know, because Jim Halsey at some point, like a few minutes later, he's understandably like freaking the fuck out. And this guy's, like, threatening him with a knife and stuff like that. So, you know, he pushes him out of the car, and then you think he got away, but then this dude is just, like, relentless. He's like a fucking Terminator, man. It's just, like, he keeps coming. Now, some people have said, because there's some stuff that, let's say, it strains credulity, okay? It's like, you know, how does this guy know where Jim Halsey is all the time? How did he get in that hotel room? Like, how did he find the hotel room? How did he get in there when the door was locked? How did he get into that, like, police station and, like, kill all those cops without getting killed and stuff like that? See, my theory, and Rutger Hauer backed me up on this, was that he's a dude, but he's an allegory for evil. You know what I mean? Because I kind of get the feeling that, yeah, he's a guy. He can be hurt and killed because, you know, he does get, like, hit by a car and he's kind of fucked up and he does get shot and apparently dies at the end. But I feel like there's a supernatural element to his character. I feel like he's, like, the High Plains Drifter, or he's, like, Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men, where it's, like, he was a real guy, but he was also a representation
of something else,
of evil, or a representation of fate. And I think that he's there because one of the first things that he says to Jim Halsey, because Jim Halsey's like, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? The first thing he says is, I want you to stop me. You know what I mean? So I feel like this is just like, I don't want to say he's like a demon, because he's obviously not, you know, like I said, he gets hurt. He's obviously a human, but I think he's like a representation of something greater. This is a very Job-like story.
Well, it's inspired from Riders on the Storm, if you know, you know. Right. So he's going to be a dream-like character, a character symbolizing what this guy imagined the Rider on the Storm from a Jim Morrison song was.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how
because he comes from nowhere. He's just, like, on the side of the road. He turns up at places that, like, you'd be like, how did he get there? How did he get there ahead of him? And he could have killed Jim Halsey at any point, but he's like toying with him. It's almost like he's grooming him because he wants Jim Halsey to be the one to kill him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like there's that whole thing going on. And like I said, you know, I was like sitting there watching it because I hadn't seen it in a long time. I saw it like back on cable, like back in the day. And the only thing I remembered was the two scenes that everybody remembers. One, the finger and the French fries. And two, Jennifer Jason Leigh getting pulled in half. So that was almost all I remembered. And I didn't even remember the whole Rutger Hauer, like, setting you know, see Thomas Howell's character up as, like, the murderer. I didn't even remember any of that aspect of it. So I kind of thought, well, maybe I'm just maybe I'm reading into it too much. But then when I, like, started reading a whole bunch of other reviews, a lot of people were making, in fact, multiple people made the No Country for Old Men reference, which is something that I thought of as well, because I'm like, that's a very similar type of character, and maybe that's where the Coen brothers got the idea. Also, a couple people made reference to High Plains Drifter, because that guy is, like, a guy, but he's also, like, has a supernatural, he's, like, a representation of, he's more a ghost, though,
yeah, he's,
I think.
Like, a, what they call, a revenant?
Yeah, a revenant,
revenant yeah.
But I definitely feel like he has a supernatural aspect to him, even though he's in human form. Because he does shit that a regular human can't do. You know what I mean? He does, like, some Jason Voorhees shit.
Yeah.
Like, showing up in places that he probably couldn't be, or how did he know where he was, and all this other kind of stuff. He doesn't, like, have any motivation. You only hear his name at the beginning. Like, he tells Jim Halsey's character his name, John Ryder, very haltingly, but then you don't know his name.
He's a rider on a storm.
Yeah, you don't know his, like, motivation or nothing. It just seems like he's doing this just for shits and giggles, and then you get, like, to the very, very end of the movie when the cops have him in custody, and he won't tell them anything. He has no ID, he won't tell them his name, and he just, like, won't talk to them, and I'm kind of thinking that they're trying to imply that he's not a ghost, but, like, not entirely a human person.
Like a demon or something.
Yeah, like, or he's, like, a representation of something else. And like I said, Rutger Hauer said the exact same thing when he was doing this role. And he was kind of upset that that a lot of critics didn't really like this movie. And he was like, because he had got kind of sick of playing villains, and he wasn't going to play any more villains, but then he got this screenplay, and he's like, oh, okay, well, I'll play one more villain. I got to play this one because this seems kick-ass. So he wanted to do this, and he was kind of disappointed that the movie, like, really didn't do very. It was pretty much a flop.
I don't understand why it didn't.
I don't really know that either. It was like, it had, like, action. It was super suspenseful.
If you ask me, was this a Hollywood movie?
It was a smaller studio, but yeah.
It makes me think there was some behind-the-scenes Hollywood chicanery going on, probably, to step on this. This may have been competition for something else that was out in the theater at the time, and, you know what I mean? They did what they could to make sure that the word did not get out on this one.
Maybe. It was made by HBO Pictures, and I believe at the time that if HBO Pictures, they had a deal with TriStar Pictures that everything that HBO Pictures made, TriStar had to distribute it. So they had that whole thing going.
Some kind of politics.
And HBO Pictures, like, the guy who was, like, the CEO or the vice president or whatever, he said that The Hitcher was, like, their best movie of that year. And he was, like, super hyped about it. And then, like, it really didn't do very well. And like I said, most critics gave it a fucking, you know, they just ravaged the shit.
They were probably paid to.
Because, well, it's just, the thing is, a lot of them didn't like it because they thought it was very nihilistic. Some of them didn't like it because it was too violent. Some didn't like it because it was not violent enough. There was, like, you know, maybe they should have shown more of the violence, because some people were, like, disappointed because I think they wanted, like, more of a slasher type movie. Some critics did like it, but not a lot of them. So it's just, it's one of those ones, you know, and I was watching this fucking video, like, one of this this channel I like that's two Brits that are always talking about, like, horror movies and scary shit, top five scary. And they did a show about the top five brilliant horror movies that were shit on by critics when they came out. And it's just, like, it's amazing how many, I mean, the critics get it right a lot of the time too, but it's amazing, like, in the case of, like, The Thing or The Shining or something like that, to go back and read some reviews about those movies when they first came out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, knowing now that there's, like, fucking classics, and it's just hilarious to me that they just got it so, so wrong. And I think they really got it wrong in this case, too, because to me, this seems like one of the best horror movies of the 80s, for sure. Certainly one of the most, like, tense thrillers of the 80s. I mean, it really, like, made a big impression on me when I saw it back
then. I don't know. I'm not going to say it's one of the best of the 80s, but maybe one of the best of the late 80s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would think that it would do pretty good for the year that it came out at. Because there's a lot of good stuff that came out during that decade. I mean, this was a good movie. It wasn't that good, though, I don't think. I wouldn't put it up there with, like, you know, Alien. or Alien 2, or, you know, like Aliens and
well,
and
yeah.
Terminator.
I mean, well, I said it was one. I said it was one.
I wouldn't put it up that far, but it is a good movie.
I mean, very few movies are as good as Aliens.
Right? Yeah. You know, there was a lot of stuff that came out in that decade. This was a decent movie, though. I don't see what the problem was.
And like I said, I feel like this is one that it seems like it kind of slipped through the cracks, which is very strange.
I think that's probably what happened. I think it was a bunch of in between stuff. Some people didn't think, you know what I mean. Some people didn't like it because it wasn't gory enough, or it was too gory, and it sort of fell into a bunch of in-between stuff. I also probably think there might have been, like I said, maybe some chicanery going on with the studios, you know, to kind of pull attention away from this one and more towards another movie that was playing at the same time.
Yeah.
That may have happened. And
I don't know what came out the same time.
Maybe it
so.
Didn't have good promotional tour before
could
the movie
have been.
Came out, so the average person didn't know much about it. It also could have been that the average moviegoer of that time was interested in other kinds of movies, because movies go in and out of style.
Yeah.
You know? So it might have been something like that.
Maybe it might have been the time of the year, too, because it came out like in February.
Right.
And that's traditionally, that's not a great time for movies. I mean, January and February, that's where studios kind of like put all their shit that they don't think is going to do that well. You know what I mean?
Another thing that I remember from the late 80s. Is that people's expectations were super high for, because there was a long string of fucking really good movies for about a decade. And it could be that there was kind of like market fatigue in a certain way, or the audiences had become more jaded. I mean, this isn't a real high-tech, spectacular stuff. And some of the stuff was shot pretty well. But we're not talking about T1. You
yeah.
know? We're not talking about, you know, Aliens. You know, when it's not a big budget movie. To me, it felt a lot like Road Warrior or Mad Max 1.
Yeah.
Like in that budget area, you know, like in that level. Still pretty good. It's just, it was, you know, that particular audience would like, but in those two movies, actually, I don't think really did all that well upon release either.
That's what I mean. It's really hard to judge
yeah.
because some things are kind of ahead of their time
yeah.
or people don't appreciate them at the time, but then like later that's why I think it's
right.
good to like do like a reassessment because
right.
sometimes you saw stuff like back in the day and you remembered it not being, but a lot of times like when I watch movies again, like this movie, I probably hadn't seen this for maybe 20 years and when I saw it again, I was like amazed. It's like that was so. It was so much better than I remembered. Because, like I said, those two scenes made a big impression, but I didn't remember a lot of the rest of the story.
Had this come out maybe like in 83 or 84, I think it would have got a lot more attention.
Now, some people, I was reading one review that said, and I actually agree with this. They're like, if this had been like directed by Sam Peckinpah and came out in the 70s, people would have been all over this shit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of his movies were this kind of tone, were very nihilistic like that, where like these horrible things happen to people. And, you know, the way that Jim Halsey's character basically has to, he doesn't want to kill people, he doesn't want to do this and that, but it almost seems like Rucker Hauer's character is like making him do it. He's like, I want you to stop me. And he's like forcing him into doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact of him, like Jennifer Jason Leigh's character getting killed, that was like a huge failure on his part because he had so many chances to kill Rucker Hauer's character before that, and he didn't take them. And they're just kind of showing how, you know, his like weakness in that department, like, you know, not taking him out when he had the chance to, then that ended up costing her life. Now, that was another thing too, that when the when this was being like shopped around and, you know, blah blah blah, and like made and everything, the executives really did not want Jennifer Jason Leigh's character, whose name is Nash, they really did not want her to die at the end. They're like, or if she does die, can we at least have a funeral or something so it's not quite so horrific? But yeah, I think even Rucker Hauer was a little bit like, man, that's fucked up. But the director, Robert Harmon, was like, yeah, but he's, like, the baddest bad guy ever. Like, so he has to do this shit and, like, not feel bad about it. So they ended up leaving it in. Although, as I said, you know, initially in the initial version of the script, they were going to show it. And I think in the remake, they did show it. And I heard that it was, like, crappy looking because it was, like, CGI.
All right.
But they actually went there and they showed all the shit and everything. And like I said, I think it's better suggested. I mean, you just see her screaming, you see her hands like straining against the ropes and stuff, and then they cut away really quick, and then there's just this horrible, sickening noise.
I want to see the movie again. I just wish that it was in, you know, theater quality. 1080p, I don't think really does the movie all that that much justice.
Yeah.
And I think it was 1080p coming off of probably like a bad DVD copy of it. That's what's on YouTube for free.
But
I would like to have a fucking Blu-ray release. I want to see what it looked like in the theaters.
Like I said, I can't really afford to order the one from Germany, so I'm kind of hoping that some, like, hey, Shout Factory, hey,
yeah.
why don't you guys release it?
Yeah, the one from Germany actually might not play on one of our on a player here.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, we usually play them on the Xbox.
A UK release usually will.
I mean, I'm pretty sure the Xbox might be region free.
I don't know.
And if it's region free, then it'll play anything from anywhere around the world.
I would just hate they want 50 something bucks for that.
That's what I mean. I was, like, amazed.
And then the DVDs aren't cheap either. You're talking about $30 for an old DVD that's not even in widescreen.
Because, like I said, I don't even think, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't even think there's been a U.S. DVD release. Like, the two-disc special edition one, that's U.K.
Right.
And, like I said, the only country that has Blu-ray is Germany, so I don't know.
It's a rare movie.
I guess, and it's like, I didn't even think that, because honestly, when we were talking about Rucker Hauer, and somebody said, oh, he just passed away, and you guys should do a Rucker Hauer movie, the first thing I thought of, like, after Blade Runner, the first thing I thought of was The Hitcher.
Yeah.
And it's
what
like,
was the one where he was hunting the alien down in the future?
Hunting the alien down in the future.
Yeah, it was like an alien ripoff. Damn monster.
I can't remember. He was in a shit ton of movies.
But it looked pretty fucking wacky, you know what I mean? I remember seeing it a long time ago, and I saw it a long time ago, I wasn't impressed. And then somebody showed some scenes from it, which reminded me of that fucking movie. And I was like, man, I wouldn't mind seeing that one again either. The tone, I remember, was kind of like RoboCop. You know what I mean? That fucking insane tone.
Did I see that? If I did, it was probably only once in a
Over the top shit, yeah.
Like I said, the only other movie that like really stood out was that Rucker Hauer was in, like other than like The Hitcher was the first one I thought of, but then I thought of like a Lady Hawk, but that's not, you know, that's a fantasy, like, love story.
I hated that.
I liked it, but...
When I was a kid, I couldn't stand it.
I liked it, but, like I said, I hate to say this about poor Rucker Hauer, but he makes a better villain. Because, like, even, like I said, when he's a good guy in this movie, he's still super scary.
I haven't seen it in a long time. I just remember not liking Lady Hawk.
He just comes off as, like, very menacing. Like, and I guess he can't really help it. You know what I mean? That's the way he is.
I don't like the sword and sandal fantasy.
It depends on what it is. I loved
Codan,
Lady Hawk.
I can do a Codan, but the other ones, I just didn't really like them that much.
I loved Lady Hawk when it came out. I think I like it less now than I did when I was a teenager, but I still really like it a lot. It's, you know, it's a cool story. You get to see a fucking bishop run through with a sword, so that's always nice. Yeah. But yeah, so seriously, if you, like, before anybody takes it down, if you can't afford to buy The Hitcher or you don't have it for some reason, there's actually there's a couple fairly decent copies of it that someone has uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah.
It actually, the one that we watched, it looks like it came from the DVD. It's a little like stretchy, like it looks like they stretched it a little bit.
Yeah, to fit the new screens.
But it's not like super noticeable. It didn't really bother me.
It's a little hazy because, you know, the definition isn't that good. But
yeah, but
shit, for free, you know.
It looked so much better because I was only used to seeing it on like HBO and VHS and shit like that. So I was actually surprised. It's like, this is like a beautiful looking movie. Like the fucking vistas of like, you know, Texas and shit like that. It's like, it looks fucking great. Like I said, it looks very much like a Mad Max type of movie. Really nice cinematography. And the score
It's not bad.
Is fantastic. Yeah. I love the score.
I got a feeling that a Blu-ray remaster would look fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. I feel like if they clean this up, because I even said to you when we were watching it, I was like, man, I remember seeing this and it looking really like muddy and horrible. And apparently it did at the time too, because some critics complained about that. They said it's so dark and it's like muddy and it looks like shit. But when I saw the, you know, the DVD quality one, I was like, wow, this is a really nice looking movie. And then, you know, then I found out it was the same guy that did
that. Yeah, there was that one scene where he's going through that abandoned service station.
Yeah, like garage or whatever.
It's like a garage and it's dark in there, but then there's light beaming in through the damn windows and all the dust. That was a fucking cool shot. Looked like something straight out of Blade Runner.
Yeah, everything was good in this. And even, like, the way the guy used the camera, he did like a really cool juxtaposition between these big wide like vistas of like nothing and then like super super tight close-ups of like people's faces, so it was like this like kind of oppressive thing, and then there was like this big thing, it's like, hey, there's nobody around to help you. And I also really liked like the one scene where John Ryder goes in and like kills all the cops, and then like he lets C. Thomas Howell's character out of the jail cell and then like gets the fuck out of there like a fucking spooky ass ghost and shit. And then there's that great scene of like C. Thomas Howell like walking down the hall super super slowly, and then that dog comes across the end of the hallway and just like looks at him and then kind of goes over there, and it's like super super slow, and he's going and going, and then the dog's like eating the fucking one of the dead cops. Just it's like it's such a good movie, and I just feel like
I wish I had seen it back in the day, because
I know I kind of wish you had too.
That way I could feel nostalgia for it when I'm seeing it, but I didn't feel any nostalgia for it
because you never saw it.
Because I never saw it before. One thing I did feel nostalgia for was all those interior shots.
Yeah,
the way restaurants used to look.
Yeah,
like the way that restaurant looked on the inside. I remember when Denny's used to look that cheap.
I remember that too.
Shit used to look really fucking cheap. Back in the
it
day.
It did. It's like now that we didn't know any better at the time, but it's like now when you see movies from back then, I was like man, everything looked crap.
I can't believe I ate in a place that looked like
everything that. Had that horrible, like cheap ass fucking
vinyl and fucking
that like faux
fake wood.
That faux wood paneling and shit.
Looked like something from a Soviet Union.
We even had that
Union.
In our house. It was awful.
Looked like something from the old Soviet Union.
It's like everything was like brown. Yeah. It's like fucking what the hell I don't know what the hell were we thinking.
And then the car interiors on all those old cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because my stepdad had that car.
Yeah.
It was a Malibu classic.
My dad had one like that, but I think it was.
And they had those fucking weird interiors. You know. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird to see all that stuff.
Now, was it that movie or was I watching? Because I was watching a couple other movies from the 80s, and I remember seeing like a couple of macrame owls. It might have been. It might have been. That might have been. Because I was watching Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
The other night.
Another good one. Chopping Mall was good.
Shudder just added that like a couple days ago. So I was like super excited.
Giving a free plug to Shudder again.
And Barbara Crampton is in it. I forgot she was in that.
Yeah, she was cute.
And I was so I was watching.
Lots of titties in that movie. If you guys want to see small 80s titties, they're up there. It's nice. And then they're like, yeah, it's fucking hilarious.
80s titties.
80s
and
titties.
Like,
and they're living in the damn
killer
mall.
Killer robots.
Killer robots that are straight out of fucking Terminator. What are they? The little hunter killer things that look like a giant tank. They look like that, but they're smaller.
They kind of look like fucking Johnny Five, from Short Circuit. If you
and they can fucking blow a girl's head off of fucking 30 meters, but they can't shoot a dude who's standing up 10 feet from. It's just fucking ridiculous.
They're really terrible shots with those lasers too. I have to say.
unless it's convenient.
Although that one girl that got her head blown off, I laughed so hard at that shot because I'd forgotten about that movie and I wasn't expecting it. And just like cracked up.
Chopping Mall also fit in with like, you know, like the Dan Bell fucking dead mall scene.
The whole thing was shot in
the whole thing was shot in a mall, and it had that same fucking mall feeling and from the mall culture, you know.
Because you could tell, just like George Romero got like the permission to film in the fucking Monroeville Mall or whatever. It's like they got permission to film overnight at this one mall. They're like,
Chopping Mall.
This movie.
Chopping Mall was a lot better than I expected it.
Even though not a lot of chopping.
No.
Mostly lasering and shooting.
Just an idea.
Or lasering.
Yeah, lasering. Getting attacked by robots.
Robots.
Yeah.
With lasers. Mm-hmm. Where does that? We were talking about that because. For some reason, they pronounced it back in the 50s, like sci-fi movies in the 50s.
Lasers and robots.
Yeah, because I was watching Time Travelers on the new MST3K, and I was like, lasers? What the fuck are you talking about?
Well,
I couldn't remember, like, because I watched Chopping Mall, and then I also watched Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I remember, like, from the last couple nights, like, seeing some macrame owls, because I remember my mom used to make those, and she taught me to make them, too, when I was little. But I don't remember. It might have been in The Hitcher that I saw the macrame owls. If anybody remembers macrame owls with the little beads for eyes and shit.
Go ahead and watch the movie. You can watch it for free. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, just go watch it now before anybody like takes it down, because I think there's at least two people that have it. Like I said, if you want to watch the remake, that's up to you, man. But it's like I don't know if I want to waste my time watching it because I've heard it was really
We're not
bad.
Reviewing the remake. We're reviewing the original. And
Now, there was a sequel to this, too.
Oh, yeah?
How
do you make a sequel to this shit?
That's what I was going to see.
I mean, it's a one-off.
Right. Okay. So it's like, that's what I mean. I think this guy is, like, not really a real person.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't think Rucker Hauer was in the second one, but C. Thomas Howell was.
Okay.
So now I'm kind of curious what happened in the second one. Like, what happened in the second one? What could possibly have happened?
I don't know.
Now I gotta go watch it. Shit. All right, so I'm gonna go watch the sequel.
Okay.
All right, so like I said, go check this out on YouTube, and we hope you have enjoyed our rambling breakdown of it. Remember, like, share, subscribe, go to Patreon, all that other good stuff, and we will see you next time.